Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Hey, it's the first Wednesday of the month. That means a look at the wonderful world of Wisconsin wildlife with Scott Craven, UW Extension wildlife ecologist, and he's going to be with us in just a couple of minutes. But I'm first joined by Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer. This is the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. Want to thank everyone who is a sustainer or who has already contributed during this drive or who regularly contributes by mail. We're a nonprofit public service radio station. We rely on listeners like you for a large portion of our income, more than a third of it. So if you haven't given yet, now's the time at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And Judith, we have a kind of a nice little incentive.
We do. We have a dollar-for-dollar match right now up to $3,000. This generous challenge is offered by an anonymous donor. It's her way of encouraging you to join her in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Get your pledge doubled right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Scott Craven will be joining us in a minute or two to talk about wolves and bats and deer, among the many other topics of interest. Discussions like this on the Ideas Network are possible because of your financial support. So I hope you'll give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And Larry, today only, everyone who pledges will be entered in a drawing for an iPad. You could be the lucky winner when you make a pledge of any amount today only at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you don't have to really pledge, do you?
No. In fact, you don't have to pledge to participate. To enter without donating, just send a postcard with your name, address, and telephone number to WPR iPad Drawing. Send that to 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Postcards received by March 10th will be entered in the drawing, along with the names of everyone who pledges today. You can find all the drawing details and make a pledge at WPR.org.
The Ideas Network is with you all day long, whether you wake up with us or you ride to work or errands with us or cook dinner with us or listen at home or at work. You get interesting discussions whenever you want them. We're always here, and you make that possible with your support, your donation. Wisconsin Public Radio wouldn't be what it is without your support. Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Like I mentioned, we have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $3,000 in effect right now, offered by an anonymous donor. Your gift of $50 turns into $100. $100 turns into $200. You get the idea. Take advantage of this match to make your gift go even farther in paying for programs like this one. Get your pledge matched dollar-for-dollar right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you pledge $120 or more, you will receive the WPR member benefit card. I have one. I get one every year. It's a card that gives you two-for-one discounts at 243 participating restaurants, 46 B&Bs, 53 cultural attractions, 22 golf courses around Wisconsin. I haven't tried the golf yet, but I'm going to do that. I've tried everything else, though.
Well, the member card is a year-long reminder of how grateful we are for your support today. We couldn't produce great radio without your donations, so we're happy to send you the member card as our way of saying thank you.
Give now, $120 or more, and you'll receive the member card. Pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Have we made any progress here,
Judith?
We've
made a little progress. Our goal for this program is 65 pledges, and we have two so far. So thank you so much to those early birds who have gotten in. But you can join them by giving now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And your pledge of any amount today, only today, gets you entered in the iPad drawing. You don't need to contribute to enter. You can see the rules and make a pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, besides pledging and being entered in the iPad drawing, if you pledge $120 or more, you can choose Food for 40 as your thank you gift. I really love this idea. This thank you gift will provide 40 meals to those facing hunger in your area. Please pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Let me give that again. Donate now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Support this program and Scott Craven. And he's here every month with us to talk about wildlife issues. It's always great to have him. And today he's with us by phone because he's at a kind of a special conference. Scott, are you with us?
I'm here, Larry. Welcome, Larry and Judith. Good to be on.
It's great to have you with us. Now, you're joining. He's joining us by phone from the Dells. And the reason you're doing that, Scott, is that you're at the joint meeting of the Wisconsin chapters of the Wildlife Society and the Society of American Foresters. What are the hot topics being covered?
Well, there are lots of things going on, Larry. The meeting started last night, runs through tomorrow noon. There are about 300 folks here, biologists, agency people, academic types, and so forth. So it's a pretty exciting place to be right now for people in my field. The general topics of interest to both the forestry side and the wildlife side have been focusing on early successional forests, young forests like aspen stands in particular, a cover type that's been declining across the northern part of the state, and of course it's critical habitat to some species that we talk about a lot, like ruff grouse and woodcock, popular game birds, as well as some songbirds like golden-winged warblers and so forth. So that's been the subject of some of the joint plenary sessions. Once the wildlife folks get on board tomorrow morning, there's talks on field borders for bobwhite quail, cormorants in Door County, Kirtland's warblers in Wisconsin.
Wow.
Tracking carnivores, bears, white nose syndrome, deer management, prairie chickens, elk genetics. It's all here, Larry.
Your brain's going to be exploding by the time you get out of there with all that great information. Wow, it sounds just absolutely wonderful. And I'm glad you were able to join us, at least for this program. By the way, if you'd like to ask Scott a question or make a comment, you can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@WPR.org. And, Scott, we have a caller, Jim, from Oshkosh, with a question or comment. Let's go to Jim. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Gentlemen, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, last fall when I was deer hunting, at one point I had 38 turkeys underneath my deer stand.
Oh.
And as we speak, there are at least 15 out in my field walking across gleaning. My question, however, is I was told by a neighbor that there were 14 of them found dead, probably within a mile of here, recently. Is the snow taking that kind of toll on those birds, or is there something else going on that you may be aware of?
Jim, there's nothing that I've heard of that would be causing mass turkey mortality. Certainly in really tough winters, we do lose a few birds, but a concentrated number like that seems a little extraordinary. For one thing, turkeys are very durable birds, and they're quite mobile. And the really deep snow cover is we had the big thaw around New Year's, and things were pretty open. Then we got a couple of big blizzards, and things sealed up again. But it really wasn't a terribly long period of deep snow cover. And when the big snow came, it came with high winds, so a lot of the fields were blown fairly clear. I'd be suspicious of a report like this. I don't doubt its validity, but I'd be suspicious that something strange was going on there, either with some type of a contaminant or some sort of mischief on the part of someone. We certainly do lose turkeys. I mean, winter's a bottleneck for all wildlife species, but 14 dead turkeys in a winter like this in one place seems a little fishy.
Yeah, something's going on there. Thanks, Jim, for calling. Appreciate your call. Dave in Wisconsin Rapids, we're on to you now. Hi, Dave.
Well, good morning to both of you. Appreciate this opportunity. Scott, as you know, there's been a lot of discussion about the bear population in the North Woods and alleged videotapes of all of the fawns they're killing and so forth. And I don't want to get into that because I don't understand all I know about it. But I have a bear story. A friend of mine, a longtime friend, has a hunting cabin up in Bayfield County. They're almost within a stone's throw of Lake Superior, if you could throw a stone a long ways. And it's near a little stream called Fish Creek. And Bill had left the cab after deer season. His son stayed to do some work. They had just actually building a new cabin there. And before he left, he decided to take a little walk around just to check things out. And he walked down toward the creek bank and got quite close to the bank. And the next thing he knew, he had broken through, and he was standing in a hole up past his hips. He was standing in some brush and grass and so forth, and he quick bailed out and looked down. And there was a bear looking up at him. This bear had apparently dug the den into the ditch bank and had holed up for the winter, and Bob dropped in on him unexpectedly.
I imagine it was a lot easier for him to get out of the hole once he saw the bear.
Well, I think he probably went out about the same speed that he went in. Over the years, they've been hunting up there for years, and they've shot a few bears up there back in the old days when you could shoot them during deer season. And so they know, have a pretty good judge of sizes of bears. He estimated that this one probably weighed 200 to 250 pounds.
Yeah.
Didn't detect whether it was a boar or a sow, but they'll be watching in the spring to see what happens there.
Oh, that's a great story.
That's a good story. And as I think all the listeners know, Larry, the bear population has, since 2008, been determined to be quite a bit larger than we thought it was. And there's been all sorts of management responses to that. And we're just in the process of launching a replicate of that survey that determined the bear population this year and next, and over the next couple of years, we'll get a really tight handle on how many bears we really have. So, kind of interesting.
Yeah, and Dave, we have I and some friends have a cabin in Bayfield County as well, and we had a kind of a similar story with one of our guys who was doing a little deer drive and stepped on a hibernating bear. The bear was still wide awake, apparently, and it took off in one direction. I think my friend took off in the other. There you go. Thanks, Dave. Peter in Stoughton, it's on to you now. Hi, Peter.
Good morning. My concern is with the DNR's policy on the white nose disease with the bats.
Mm-hmm.
They sealed up the caves. And I'm wondering, well, where do the bats go?
Well, I don't believe they've sealed up the cave, any caves other than figuratively rather than literally. The new regulations going into place, among other things, seal the caves in the sense that they may eliminate some human uses of the caves. And they have some provisions for sanitation or disinfectant of caving materials, clothing, boots, and so forth for people coming and going, all designed to slow the spread of the fungus if and when it's discovered here. So that's one figurative way that I think the impression may be that there's some closures. And then in addition, some bat caves over the years, even before white nose syndrome was an issue, were sealed in the sense that bat gates were put on them, which are essentially grates like you'd see over a storm sewer, which prevent kids from partying in there or other types of human use or trespass where it's deemed critically important for the bats, but the gates are porous to bats. It doesn't affect their coming and goings at all. I don't know of any other than in cases of perhaps an old mine shaft that was deemed
a hazard.
A terrific safety risk or hazard where it might have actually been completely sealed. And I think in most of those cases, those old mines had multiple entrances and shafts and so forth so that bats still had access even if a potentially dangerous access was sealed.
Yeah.
So I don't think that there's no action that I know of dealing with the response to the likely arrival of white nose syndrome.
It's been detected in Indiana, has it not, Scott?
Yeah, just in the past fairly short period of time, this winter, a few weeks ago, it was announced that it was detected in Indiana, and then I just saw a report a couple days ago that it spread into North Carolina. It had been in Missouri previously, so this is all a rather rapid spread from the focal point in upstate New York, which was only in 2006. So
yeah, it's moving fast.
It seems like the discovery in Wisconsin is inevitable, so the steps the DNR has been putting into place are designed to minimize or slow its impact when and if it does get here.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling, Peter. Scott Craven, UW Extension Wildlife Ecologist, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Scott Craven, UW Extension Wildlife Ecologist, joins us today here on the Ideas Network. You can join in with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Scott, we had an email from Justin in La Crosse, and he says, please ask Scott if he's able to talk about the DNR's $2 million plan to use helicopters to shoot deer with nets for tagging purposes, and what's the value given the tough economic conditions that we're facing in the state right now?
Okay, well, that's a pretty good question. There are four or five major deer research programs being launched here. They're in progress. The update that I saw yesterday mentioned that about 180-some deer had already been captured. They're capturing them with a variety of ways, but the helicopter contract was just one of those. They were flying a small helicopter in central Wisconsin on contract, and the crew was catching deer with what's called for lack of a better term, a net gun. And the net is fired from a shoulder-mounted gun. It's an elaborate little device, but it works pretty well. And then the deer are bundled up and quickly flown to a processing site where the data necessary are collected, and they're collared with a radio transmitter and then returned from where they came. So that's just one of a number of capture techniques. And although it is expensive per deer in that particular tool, having crews out using more traditional box traps and things like that is also very expensive, but you have to have the experimental animals if you're going to conduct the research. Now, these studies that deal with deer population estimates, the predation by bears and other species that the other caller alluded to, buck recovery rates, all things critical to good deer management in Wisconsin, have been on hold for a long time, and they've only been implemented now because of an influx of funding from the Pittman-Robertson Act. That, remember, that's the federal excise tax on arms and ammunition. And recall that after the last presidential election, for better or for worse, there was a huge rush on ammunition because of fears of tighter controls and things like that. And this led to a large increase in the amount of federal funding available to go to wildlife agencies to support wildlife research. So this was, in essence, this was a windfall to a certain extent that has allowed Wisconsin to initiate some research that they've wanted to do and needed to do for a long time. So it's not coming out of the unbelievably tight budgets we're hearing about. It's not something that's making the need for cuts worse or anything like that. This is money earmarked for this purpose, and we've been waiting for it for a long time.
We have Annette in Madison up with a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Annette.
Hi, good morning. I have a question about foxes.
Okay.
We were at our farm last weekend, and I looked out the window, and I saw a fox out in the field, and it started coming towards the house, and it pounced on something, and it turned out it was another fox. So I looked it up, and I found out that this is their mating season.
Mm-hmm.
So we followed them with binoculars and saw that they were going into our swale, and I think there may be a den there, but the dog also saw them, and so that caused great concern for us. So we were thinking that maybe what we could do is go out and walk that area without the dog so that the foxes would know we're there, and that might encourage them to find another denning spot. We did not do that because we wanted to
see if it was okay. Okay. What do you think, Scott?
Well, you're right. It is the breeding season. I mean, lots of spring events are underway now and will be kicking off very soon. We could talk a little more about that. But it is the breeding season for fox. I'm sure the foxes already know you're there. And whether or not you're, you know, going for a stroll would cause them to relocate from a den site is pretty questionable, I think, because, as I said, foxes in kind of rural or urban fringe areas are sometimes there because they've been pushed there by coyotes that are a little more common, a little further out of town, and they can become very bold and very tolerant of human activity. and probably not going to be greatly bothered by the dog either, unless the dog actually gets out there and starts digging around in the den. The other consideration is that you'd describe it as a swale or a low spot that you saw them go into.
Yes.
I mean, they may have been hunting rabbits there or doing something else. Foxes generally like to den on an exposed slope with some sort of a commanding view of the countryside. So a low spot is probably
not
the den site.
No.
So I'd be looking on, you know, if you've got rolling terrain, look at a high spot or a slope or something like that, and that's more likely to be where the den is.
Yep.
You can certainly walk around there, and I don't think the foxes are going to pay much attention one way or the other. And if you do find the den, and for whatever reason they've chosen that site, then you can just give that a wide berth and try and keep the dog away from them for a few weeks and let them go about their business.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the kits, she'll deliver in some April or May, right?
The pups, in terms of the gestation period, I mean, it depends on when breeding occurs. The gestation period for all members of the dog family is right around 2 months.
Uh-huh.
63 days, I think, to be more or less exact. And then there's a period of dependency when the pups are around the den and hanging around and so forth. So if, assuming the animals have already bred, you're probably looking at the better part of 3 months before or more before the pups are off and capable of taking care of themselves.
There you go.
The dog's not going to like that, but I guess she'll have to adjust.
She will just have to adjust. That's all there is to it, Annette. Thanks for calling. Chris had an email that relates to hibernation. Is coming out of hibernation temperature, light, or time dependent, Scott? Or maybe something else, like a loss of body fat. If the winter is very long or prior to hibernation, food was scarce, so the animal's reserves were low to begin with.
Well, we have so few true hibernators, Larry, that there's not a lot of animals to talk about here. An emergence in the spring, you wonder, well, how could it be related to them going into hibernation? It's a day-length thing and changing temperatures and so forth. Anyway, all of these factors interact, and eventually you have an animal here that's under. For bears, it's a little easier to understand. As we've just learned, some of them are virtually out in the open. So environmental cues like warming and changes in day length and that kind of thing are a little easier for the bears to detect. But for a 13-line ground squirrel, for example, that's 3 feet underground in a burrow, how the heck do they know what's going on? But the frost does come out of the ground, and there are other cues like that that are related to the onset of spring that eventually these animals stir and they're up and about.
Scott Craven, UW Extension wildlife ecologist, our guest here on the Ideas Network. Judith Sears-Poisson joins me again here as we talk about our winter drive. We rely on listener contributions to pay for all the programs that you enjoy here on the Ideas Network. And during this winter drive, we're asking you to take action by becoming a contributor to Wisconsin Public Radio. Every gift helps support the programs you rely on. Make yours at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
And we have a dollar-for-dollar match right now, Larry, up to $3,000. It's in effect right now during this program only. It's a great time to pledge because for every dollar you give, an anonymous donor will donate an additional dollar. It's her way of encouraging you to support this program. Double the buying power of your pledge right now by giving at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
At the end of the hour, you'll often hear the guest say, thanks for your great listeners, and thank you for being such thoughtful and active listeners, and thanks for your financial support, which makes it all possible. If you haven't pledged yet, I hope you'll do it now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
Larry, we have an exciting drawing today only. Pledge any
yes.
amount and you'll be entered into a drawing for an iPad. All pledges today only at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 will be entered in this drawing. You can find out all the details about the iPad drawing at WPR.org and make your pledge while you're there.
I have an iPad. I love my iPad, and my 7-year-old daughter Emily loves it. My wife loves it. We really have a lot of fun with it, and it's a great tool as well. And maybe that's one reason you should give at this moment. Maybe there are other reasons. And one of the best reasons maybe is because you're listening right now and you're thinking about it right now.
It's the right thing to do and you'll feel great when you do it. WPR is an important public service and you'll be making a wise investment in quality music, entertainment, news, and talk.
We use your donation wisely. We're putting it into programs that you hear every day. And I hope you'll support this station and this program that you value right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Maybe you've already made the decision to become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio, but you're just looking for the best way to fit it into your budget. A sustaining membership may be the answer. You decide on a monthly amount to be deducted from your bank account or credit card, and you set it up to be ongoing.
Sustaining, automatically renewing membership, those are very powerful because they're really cost efficient for us and very reliable for us. And I think they're convenient and affordable for you as well. So choose a monthly amount and become a sustaining member right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And to say thanks for your ongoing contribution, we will have a tree planted in the Shawamigan Nicolet National Forest on your behalf.
And that's such a great thing to pick
that's
up
great.
On. And another great thing is the challenge that we have right now. It's a dollar-for-dollar challenge up to $3,000. We have raised so far $1,980, so we're just a little over $1,000 short of being able to make that challenge grant. We also have a goal of 65 pledges by 12:30, and we need 43 more to get there.
Your pledge of any amount today only gets you entered in that iPad drawing. You don't need to contribute to enter. See the rules, make a pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And when you pledge $120 or more, you can choose Food for 40 as your thank you gift. This special thank you gift will provide 40 meals to those facing hunger in your area. Please pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Again, you can donate at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
And thank you.
Thank you very much to everybody who's contributed. Scott Craven, UW Extension Wildlife Ecologist with us. Scott, we have a question from Jerry in Clintonville. Let's go there. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning, Scott and Larry. Yeah, I've been feeding birds for quite a few years, and in the past, I just see a few cardinals, but this year we've had quite a few cardinals. In fact, I look out the window right now, and we see about four or five. I understand we're kind of at the northern edge of their territory. Are there more reports, more cardinals being moving up further north, or is this just localized?
Cardinals, Jerry, have been moving north for years. I remember as a college student, which was 70 or 80 years ago for me, seeing a cardinal, and this was back on the East Coast, and a cardinal attracted, oh, my gosh, a cardinal, this is unbelievable. And of course, now they've become commonplace in the Northeast and, of course, here in the Lake States. And they probably still continue to move north slightly, but I can't give you an explanation, Jerry, but I share your observation. I have never had half as many cardinals as I have around my feeding station and have had for basically the whole winter. Some days, a dozen or 14 at a time. Both males and females, and it's been great. Lots of cardinals, not so many finches this year, but feeding stations come and go. But for whatever reason, I don't think this is a matter of more cardinals coming up from the south. I think this is a matter of the cardinal population here in the southern half of Wisconsin has had an exceptional breeding season last year, or whatever the explanation is, but it's really been a great year for cardinals, and if they have a good reproductive season this spring, we should have lots of cardinals.
Yeah, we sure should.
Yeah, we enjoy them, so we always just keep on feeding them.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks, Jerry. Thank you for calling. John in Wyawega, we are on to you. Hi, John.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
I would like to know if it's legal for someone to dig a ditch through a swamp and then fill it in and make a road out of it.
Filling in a wetland? Oh, well, I tell you what, you need permits for that, I'm pretty sure, don't you, Scott?
Yeah, I think Larry's right here that any manipulation of a wetland at this point is covered by a variety of permits. both the DNR at the state level and NRCS, the Natural Resources Conservation Service, the modern equivalent of the old Soil Conservation Service, are both involved in this kind of thing. Is this a case where this is, John, without tipping your hand here, is this something you want to do or that you're concerned you've seen somebody else doing? Or
I see someone else did it, yeah.
Yeah, for one thing, it's possible that they may have the necessary permits in hand. My advice to you is call your local office of NRCS, the Natural Resources Conservation Service, or the DNR, either one, the local DNR service center or NRCS, depending on which one's easier for you to find, and just say, hey, I'm a little concerned that I'm seeing some wetlands filling going on in such and such a township, or if you can give the section or the address or whatever, and just simply say you're concerned and wanted to make sure the necessary permission was in place. And they'll take it from there.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very good idea.
If they have the if the individuals have the permits, they'll probably tell you that and say, hey, nothing to worry about. You know, we're aware of this, and they have permission. And if they don't, they'll be getting a visit.
They'll be getting a visit.
It happened a while ago, maybe 8-9 years ago.
Well, that may be a little more problematic, but I think there are cases where illegal actions have been discovered, and mitigation or restoration is sometimes mandated. So
still wouldn't hurt.
I still think it wouldn't hurt to make the call.
Thanks, John, for calling. Appreciate it. And Mary in La Crosse, on to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hi, thanks a lot. I have to tell you something, if I may first.
Sure.
Number one, I absolutely am passionate about Wisconsin Public Radio, and I contribute my small amount. Scott's one of my favorite people because I was an environmentalist long before it was even a word. I grew up in the 40s and 50s, and at the end of our property was a creek. And we played in that creek. We fished in that creek. We lived in that creek in the summertime, but it flooded. Somebody decided it needed to be straightened. And so I remember my nephew that was 4 years younger than I, up in a tree on the bank of the creek watching the bulldozers fill in our creek and being sick about losing the fishing and the frogs, and we worried about everything. Well, that didn't work, so then now through my town is a concrete waterway with fence around it, and of course nobody can play in that creek. Anyway, but my question is, thank you anyway for this program.
Sure.
Last spring, my son, for the first time on his farm, bought a few ducks and chickens. And the ducks quickly outgrew the swimming pool that we had for them. And fortunately, my daughter bought a property down by Ferryville, Wisconsin, and Rush Creek borders on the back. There's a wonderful spring that starts up higher on their property, and there's a little pool in her horse pasture. And so we took the ducks out there, and they have lived beautifully, and it stays open enough, and she has to break it when it's been real cold. She's had to break the ice for the horses to get through the water, and she discovered that the duck poop is really, really thick. And when she stirs up the water, and it was so clear, it was so beautiful. And so she is wondering if there are only five ducks. They're the white Pekin ducks or whatever. Mm-hmm. But she's concerned about, is this water, is it healthy? What might it be doing to any other living creatures in that little stream that goes down to Rush Creek? What do you think?
Well, that's a complicated question, Mary. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, I thought you were headed for, well, the domestic ducks kind of outgrew the pond, so we took them out to such and such a pond or stream or wildlife area, and that might have been a bit problematic because the ducks are prolific poopers, as you've determined. And that kind of thing has been implicated in other settings like municipal beaches where there are large goose and duck populations or other such settings where the coliform bacterial count and other issues have led to beach closures and water quality concerns and so on and so forth. in a small setting like that, if it's a ways from this little pool down to this this feeder stream before it goes into Rush Creek, chances are those nutrients are absorbed or used, or when things are flushed out in spring flooding, it distributes over the landscape. It's probably not a big deal. I think the bigger concern, if there is one at all, might be whether or not this little pool, which apparently is used by other animals even on their farm, like I think you mentioned horses, whether there's anything going on there. And even that, I kind of doubt. But I think just to be on the safe side, the issue here, if there is an issue, is one of both wildlife and domestic stock health. And that's a question that would probably be best posed to the veterinarian that you're
working with,
or whoever works with those farm animals. And that may necessitate a little bit of a water sample and a test. And I'm guessing it's probably no big deal.
Yeah.
But it might give you some peace of mind if there was a test done.
Thanks, Mary, for calling. Appreciate it. Scott Craven, UW Extension Wildlife Ecologist, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a question about wildlife, I hope you'll join in with that question at 800-642-1234. James and Phillips with us next with a question. James, hi. James, are you there? Oh, wait a minute. Hold on, James. There. Now I think I've got you. I've got your volume up now. Go ahead.
Hi, Larry, Scott. Hello. I'm 77 years old, and I hunted a few snowshoe rabbits in my day. Seems like the population has been dwindling.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, I don't think there's one rabbit or rabbit track in Price County, and I was just wondering what happened to the population.
Hmm. Well, tell you what, James, my cabin's in Price County, and now that I think about it, I haven't seen a snowshoe hare there in the last couple of winters. I've been poking around the cabin. Mm-hmm. There's a couple things going on. For one thing, we talked a little earlier about the kinds of things that are being talked about at this meeting I'm attending today in terms of forests maturing and habitat change, and that affects snowshoe hares as much as it does the grouse and woodcock and some of the other species we talked about.
Oh.
So that's one issue, that there have been some, you know, slow but insidious and persistent changes in habitat since the big glory days of logging and so forth in the North Woods. That's one thing. Number two, hares are subject to the same cyclic population fluctuations that grouse are. And we're on the downhill side now of a population peak, so hares can go from, even in very good habitat, especially as you move further north from Wisconsin, incredibly abundant, to a few years later, almost impossible to find one, just because of their natural population fluctuations. So that's number two. And number three, hares, like all members of the lagomorph or rabbit and hare group, are at the bottom of the heap when it comes to the dinner line. So everybody out there, all the foxes, all the coyotes, all the bobcats, and everybody
wolves.
Else that can catch a hare will try and catch a hare and turn it into a meal. And as there's been a lot of attention lately to, you know, what seem to be very healthy populations of midsize and larger predators across the North Woods, and that, plus the habitat maturation, plus the normal cyclic fluctuations in hares, I think have teamed up to mean that you probably aren't going to see very many hares for a while.
Yeah, there you go. There you go, James. Thank you so much for calling. Julie in Mondovi, it's on to you now. Hi, Julie.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a mystery I'm hoping you can help solve.
Okay.
On Valentine's Day morning, I went out. We have a farm with a barn, and off of one side of the barn is a loafing shed for the horses. And up in the corner of the roof line, I heard lots of activity. My first thought was that it was baby birds having hatched out. And as I listened more carefully, it almost sounded like a mammal with babies suckling. And I couldn't figure out what it was. This happened one day last year, too, and I took the ladder and tried to see through the roof soffit area. I even took the digital camera out there but couldn't get anything on camera. And I'm just wondering what that could have been that would have hatched or been born on Valentine's Day.
That's pretty darn early for any mammals.
Owls? Would owls?
I mean,
yet?
Owls. Even it's possible horned owls, but you know they wouldn't be hidden in a building corner. I mean,
no.
Horned owl nests in an open nest bowl, usually in a big tree or something like that. So I'm not altogether sure that you were hearing young. There are several animals, raccoons in particular, also porcupines, that can make some just a bizarre repertoire of sounds that could easily be mistaken for young in terms of their, you know, soft squeaking and chirping and cooing and all sorts of strange sounds that are sometimes just part of communication, sometimes breeding communication and so forth, but don't necessarily mean that there were young there. Do you have any other than hearing the sounds, no droppings, no hairs, no other information to go on?
Couldn't find any other sign, and this happened one morning last winter around this time as well. And it did strike me as too early for anything to be born or hatched, but it lasted maybe half the day, and then I didn't hear it again after that, and nothing the next day.
Well, I'm guessing that something was up in there. If there are some rafters or there's a space up there between beams and a ceiling or whatnot, something was in there, and probably a mammal rather than a bird. And the only thing I can suggest, as we've suggested, you know, times in the past on the program, with the ready availability now of remotely triggered motion sensitive or infrared cameras. If you could mount such a camera, borrow one from a hunting friend, they're not usually using them this time of year to monitor deer movements, mount the camera up on that corner or up above the roof or whatever would give you some visual view of where you're hearing the sound and see if you pick up any pictures. That might help.
That's a great idea. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call, Julie. Scott Craven, UW Extension Wildlife Ecologist. Our guest, I'm Larry Mueller with Judith Sears-Poisson, and this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. More than ever, you rely on Wisconsin Public Radio and the Ideas Network for intelligent discussions, and more than ever, we rely on the money you give to keep the talk on the air. So your gift today, maybe it's $60 or $120, any amount will help keep this important forum for discussion on the air in the coming months. So give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
So, Larry, we had a dollar-for-dollar match up to $3,000 that was offered by an anonymous donor, and we made it. We're very thrilled to say that. Yay! So thank you so much to all of you that have already pledged. But those of you that have not pledged yet, it doesn't mean that there's not a need for you to call right now at 888-202-2552. Larry, we still have a goal of 65 pledges before 12:30, and we're just about 6 pledges short right now. So we definitely want to get to that goal, and let's be honest, we'd like to exceed that goal. So give us a call, 888-202-2552, or you can also pledge at WPR.org.
On the Ideas Network, you hear about science, you hear about the humanities, current events, the environment, finance, history, food, the outdoors, you name it. It's a valuable service, a service worth supporting. Your contribution, be it $50 or $100 or whatever, $1,000, whatever amount you choose, make these Ideas Network programs possible. And if you haven't pledged yet, please do it now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And if you need an extra incentive to pledge right now, we have an exciting drawing today. Pledge any amount and you'll be entered into a drawing for an iPad. Larry was talking about how much he likes his. I could tell you about how much I want one of my own. But you can be entered into a drawing for that if you pledge today. It's today only at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You can find out all the details about the iPad drawing at WPR.org. And easily enough, you can also make your pledge while you're there.
Well, I think it's an investment in your own brain. I mean, I'm a retired person now, and as you get older, you do realize you need to keep your brain flexible. and even when I was younger, it's good to keep your brain flexible. And investing in public radio, in Wisconsin public radio, really helps me to keep my brain up to date and gives me different ideas and different viewpoints. Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for a better life.
And I'm Larry Mueller, and Wisconsin Public Radio is a great source of information for my life, too, and for my own brain, and for the brain of Judith Searce-Poisson. I'm pretty sure of that,
oh,
too.
Absolutely.
And we're here to ask your support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Listener support, such a big part of the program, why it's available to you right now. Please make your donation in support of the program you count on at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Many listeners become donors out of a sense of social responsibility. They want to make a contribution to the greater good. And Larry, we talk a lot about Wisconsin's many natural resources. If you, the listeners, think of WPR as a shared resource, and if you yourself have been getting value out of it over the past year or 2 years or 3 years or 20 years or more, it's time to put something back in.
Make a donation for yourself and also really for your community as well. The amount's up to you. The important thing is that you participate. Give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio has high standards, and we have those high standards because we know you're intelligent, and because of that, we try to aim high. Because you appreciate the intelligent conversations you get on the Ideas Network, please make a pledge at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
We've had some wonderful comments. Chris from Dubuque, Iowa says, I love WPR. I listen all day, every day. It keeps me informed on everything from politics to gardening. Anne from River Falls says, because of WPR, listen to this, I'm interested in politics, I read fascinating books, and I'm a better gardener.
There you go.
I tell you what, she's learned a lot. You have probably learned a lot, too, and enjoyed listening. I hope you'll join in with your contribution now. Give at WPR.org or call us at 888-202-2552.
This show in particular really focuses on Wisconsin, what makes Wisconsin unique, and the things that we all enjoy being here in this great state. If you have a strong sense of what it means to be a Wisconsinite, chances are that Wisconsin Public Radio plays an important role in that sense of identity. We serve the entire state.
On Wisconsin Public Radio, you get news, you get voices and sounds from around the state. Over time, all these broadcasts add up to a strong sense of connection to the state that we call home.
Wisconsin Public Radio, it's a home we all share, and it's funded in large part by our listeners. Please give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And, of course, we have that exciting drawing today. Pledge any amount, and you will be entered into a drawing for an iPad. Judith and I are not eligible to be... I have one already anyway. But I'll tell you what, all pledges today only today at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 will be entered in this drawing. You can find out all the details at WPR.org and make a pledge while you're there.
If you're like me, you've learned about so many topics from Wisconsin Public Radio and especially from Larry's show. For example, we have discussions about gardening, about food, about travel, personal computers, weather, health. We try to bring you a wide variety of topics.
We are here, whatever it is, I think we're here for you, and we're watching the latest information on topics that interest you. So I hope you'll invest in your future listening. Donate now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Join your friends and your neighbors in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. It takes the support of everyone who listens to make this radio station as good as it can be.
When you make your pledge at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552, you will be doing your part to ensure that you always have the news and information you need every day. So go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're thrilled that you stepped up and took advantage of the wonderful, generous challenge that we had, a dollar-for-dollar challenge up to $3,000. We exceeded that. We've also exceeded our goal of 65 pledges for this show. We are at 68, but that doesn't mean there's not a good reason to donate now. Please do so at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Any amount today only gets you entered in that iPad drawing. No contribution necessary to enter. You can see the rules, make a pledge at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
One of my favorite pledge premiums is when you pledge $120 or more, you can choose Food for 40 as your thank you gift. This special thank you gift and special partnership will provide 40 meals to those facing hunger in your area. Please pledge now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Lots of great calls. Robert from Green Bay says, thank you for helping me be a more responsible citizen. Susan from Appleton says, I don't know how I would be so informed on what's going on in our world today without Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you so much for the great programming. Janet Madison says, I listen to your station at home and in the car at various times of the day. Thank you very much. Well, thank you, Janet, and thanks to you if you have contributed so far. If you haven't contributed yet, this would be an excellent time to put in a vote for this program, for Wisconsin Public Radio in general, but also for this program and Scott Craven and all the wonderful topics and information he brings to us every month, the first Wednesday of the month. Call now at 888-202-2552 or go online to WPR.org. Make your contribution. We'll be back with Scott after the news. Nice to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here as we talk the world of wildlife with Scott Craven, UW Extension Wildlife Ecologist. Great to have him along. Thank you for listening in. We're going to go right to the phones and to Lois in Eau Claire, who's been waiting a long time. Lois, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Scott.
Hello.
I heard the gentleman who was concerned about snowshoe hare population in Price County.
Yes.
And I just wanted to say I think Eau Claire County is just fine. I have one, I think, living under my screen porch and makes nice, beautiful tracks by my front door. And so I put out some seed and was able to show a granddaughter what a rabbit track looks like. So I may feel that that's a mistake this summer when they're eating my garden. But anyway.
Have you seen that animal?
Oh, yes.
And it's nice and white?
Yes.
Good.
Yep. Yeah.
They're very pretty this time.
Yeah, and beautiful. So just wanted to say that they are around.
Thank you, Lois. Yeah, they're not extirpated, that's for sure. They're still around, but as Scott says, you know, they go through cycles just like grouse. They're a little bit of a down cycle. So, Lois, you're lucky to have one in your yard, as a matter of fact. Thank you very much for calling. Darren and Madison, you are up next. Hi, Darren.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I have a question. I run a small kayak guiding company called Breathing Waters out of Madison, and I was wondering if you had any recommendations on good kayak accessible viewing hotspots for loons and other migratory birds in south central or central Wisconsin, maybe some specific locations or specific times that you might expect the best window for loon viewing in southern Wisconsin.
Well, Darren, I think that that's the kind of a question. That's the kind of thing I'd like to help you with more than I can do on a few seconds on the radio. So my suggestion is give me a call at my office at the university in the Forest and Wildlife Ecology Department, and we can go over some maps, and I think I can be of much more use to you. My immediate response is, of course, for both the kayaks and the loons, we need to get some ice broken up. So later on in March, as things begin to break up, for loons, it's going to be the bigger bodies of water, particularly the Madison Lakes, as they're moving back through. And we've had some springs lately where, boy, right along John Nolan Drive and near Monona Terrace, there have been loons all over the place on the lakes there. So
we live on Lake Monona, as a matter of fact, Darren. And someone was up on the Monona Terrace with binoculars and counted 100 loons on Lake Monona One morning. One morning.
That's about as good as it's going to get for loon viewing. But I think from the standpoint of getting away from, there's something to be said for getting away from the urban environment,
yeah,
too,
yeah,
as far as the kayaking and then the lower Wisconsin Riverway and maybe the Sugar River, other things like that. But in any event, my suggestion is give me a call at the office sometime over the next week or two, and we can talk in more depth on that.
Sure. Thanks a lot, Scott.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Darren. Jackie in Milwaukee, we're on to you now. Hi, Jackie.
Good morning. I contributed. I might do it again. I'd like to tell people first, look outside. Get out. I know it's been hard with the snow, but you're missing an awful lot. I'd like a question. The foxes came up. 2 years ago, we had a vixen who had three young on the other side of a creek. I live on the northwest side of Milwaukee. A week and a half ago, there was what I thought was a fox in my neighbor's yard, my yard is fenced, eating something. But I've been rethinking that. How big are they? Do they call them dog foxes? How big are they? I've got a chow that is about 16 to 18 inches at the shoulder. And this critter was as big as he. And his coat was not heavy the way I would think a fox would be. His legs were almost bare. And he didn't have a real big plume tail. Did I have a coyote in the backyard?
That's possible, isn't it, Scott?
Well, there are three possibilities, Jackie. For one thing, this time of year, with prime fur, a red fox, especially fluffed up in cold weather, is a big, bushy-looking animal. No. Now, without that really heavy, long fur, a naked fox is a sorry-looking sight,
yeah,
to be sure. But there are a couple of things. First of all, if it was not really bright orange, orange-red, as you think of the red fox,
no,
a gray fox would be about the same size, but the fur is much shorter. The legs would appear much more slender because the fur isn't as long or as luxurious, and the tail isn't as bushy either. But that animal would have more of a grayish cast to it, with the rusty parts only kind of on the extremities and belly and so forth, rather than overall.
This and was about 16 inches at the shoulder, which my chow is.
Well, either of those animals could approach that, but if you would describe the animal more as a kind of a tawny brown or beige color, then I'm thinking coyote.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Me
and
too.
It could have been any one of the three in a suburban environment like that. Any of the three pop up, and a coyote certainly is another possibility. They're all members of the dog family,
yeah,
and all look pretty much the same.
Well,
yep.
My one small dog has been a lot leerier about going outside, and he'll go out, and all of a sudden he puts his nose up in the air, and he yodels like crazy, and he didn't do that before.
Yeah.
Well, coyotes are certainly more of a threat to small companion animals, cats or small dogs, than a fox would be. So
thanks.
Keep your eyes open.
Yeah, keep your eyes open, Jackie. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it very much. Dale in Menasha, we are on to you now. Hi, Dale.
Hey, yeah, this is Steele. Hey, I'm curious about the sociability of crows. And I'm looking on Wikipedia. I wish I saw the other, but we have eastern crows, western crows, Florida crows, southern crows. And last winter, I would drive around the street and pick up dead squirrels and stuff because my mother was in a wheelchair. And so I wanted all the creatures on the planet to entertain my mother. And the crows seem a lot more gun-shy in this part of the world. And maybe 4 years ago, I was in Blaine, Washington, and there's also western crows, and they would come right up to the window, and I'd cook rice and throw out all kinds of stuff. So what about why are some crows more paranoid in Wisconsin than
elsewhere? Okay, what about that, Scott?
Well, the crows we have here are fairly social birds, and they congregate together at good food sources. They also gather up late in the afternoon at staging areas and then move to communal roosts in a big stand of evergreens or some suitable location for the night roost. So they do flock together, but if they've been persecuted at all, crows are very wary birds. They're very difficult to approach and hunt, and you see them along the roadside, but you very rarely see a road-killed crow. They're just very capable of taking care of themselves. And I would say that the normal response to crows, as opposed to the response you had of trying to attract them in, they're certainly interesting to watch, and for someone who's housebound, any activity outside the window is a great thing. But many people are unhappy about crows around the yard, either because of the noise factor or them pecking open trash on trash day or a variety of other problems. And if the crows are used to being chased or harassed or bothered in such a setting, then they do become a little more wary. And there have also been some concerns over the last few years about whether West Nile virus, that problem, which crows are prone to, has actually put our crows on the run, so to speak, from a population standpoint. So there are a couple things going on, but in different settings, all animals behave very differently in terms of how wary or how accustomed to human activity they are.
Yep. Thank you very much for calling. Ron in Viroqua, we're on to you. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Larry. I've been waiting for this program. You announced it for a Thursday morning, and I was so afraid it wasn't going to be put on. But I'm a new bird watcher. I have a cabin in the woods, and I hung a small bird feeder about 20 feet from my cabin on a tree. And I've been recording birds that have lighted on the bird feeder. But they seem to throw the seeds out, and they're all in the ground. And I keep refilling the feeder, but they keep throwing them out, and they're more and more on the ground. But I've just been having so much fun. And I've duplicated all my birds that I've seen. The greatest one was a northern harrier in flight, a male.
Wow.
It was the most beautiful bird. Well, I'm not sure. I think it falls under the hawk category.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
But it was a pure white underbelly and wings with a black-edged wingtip. It was just unbelievable. I watched it for about 5 minutes, and I was sorry I couldn't see it again because I wanted to reconfirm that. But what I saw, I go by the Peterson Field Guide, and my daughter lent me her book, and I'm so glad she did, because I've even recorded birds that are supposed to be here in the summer. There have been a few here. In fact, this morning there were 4 mourning doves feeding off my ground seeds, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's been really fun. The one thing one question I have is, how do I keep the squirrels away from the seeds?
Well, the first
we're
thing,
laughing because we know the issue.
That's a very difficult proposition. There are feeders designed with counterbalanced weights that close the door of the hopper or whatever if a heavy squirrel gets on there. Sometimes suspending the feeders from a narrow wire will help. There are a variety of squirrel tactics. There's a book, actually, a little paperback called Outwitting Squirrels by William Adler, which is just a riot to read, and it will give you, a good perspective on dealing with squirrels. But that's a tough battle. And the scratching of the seed, some birds do throw a lot of seed on the ground. They either don't find the seed satisfactory, or they're just scratching around. But what ends up on the ground is great for the juncos and the doves and the other birds that normally feed on the ground, as well as a few small mammals you may attract. But I appreciate your call. That was a great testimonial for getting involved in bird feeding and bird watching, and it's hard to not be a bird watcher once you've become a bird feeder. So it really is great. There are lots of different bird species. They're interesting and fun to watch, and it's a great hobby.
It is a great hobby, and thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And, Scott, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today here on the Ideas Network. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure for me, and good luck with Pledge Drive.
Yeah. Scott Craven, UW Extension wildlife ecologist, our guest, comes by the first Wednesday of every month to talk about what's going on in the outdoors and nature. It's Scott and I are good friends, too, personal friends. And so for me, it's always great to have him be with us today. And it's always great to have Judith Sears Poisson join us as well. We're asking you to think about how much you rely on WPR's Ideas Network for enlightening information. We're asking you to think about right now about what it means to you. And we're here right now to remind you that WPR relies on you to keep programs like this one on the air. This is our winter membership drive. Any gift, any amount makes a big difference in our ability to pay for the programs you count on. So I hope you'll make a gift now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And Larry, I'm very pleased to say that we've exceeded our goal, which was 65 pledges during this program. But you know what? We are only 5 pledges away from hitting 100 pledges. So let's make that our new goal.
I'd make it 130.
Well, let's just go for 100 and we'll see where we're at. We have 10 more minutes left in the show. Pledges like yours keep us on track to support the programs you count on. Thanks if you've already given. If not, please give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Don't listen to Judith. We're going to go for 130. We're going to go to double here. You've been enjoying the conversations with Scott Craven, UW Extension Wildlife Ecologist. We've talked about wolves, bats, deer, other interesting topics. So now's your chance to take a few minutes to make this program and the many more programs to come possible. Please put a value on the programs you enjoy every day. Then make your pledge at WPR.org or calling 888-202-2552.
Today only, everyone who pledges will be entered in a drawing for an iPad. You could be the lucky winner when you make a pledge of any amount. Today only at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. In fact, you don't have to pledge to participate. To enter without donating, send a postcard with your name, address, and telephone number to WPR iPad Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Those postcards need to be received by March 10th to be entered in the drawing. You can find all the drawing details and you can make a pledge at WPR.org.
Wisconsin Public Radio is having a drawing for an iPad. Anyone who contributes today at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 will be entered in the drawing. No contribution is necessary to win, and you can also enter by sending a postcard with your name, address, and phone number to WPR iPad Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Postcards received by March 10th will be entered in the drawing. Employees of WPR and its affiliates and members of their immediate family and their households are not eligible, and you must be a resident of the United States. The retail value of the iPad is $499, as determined by the price listed by a major online retailer. The prize is not redeemable for cash, and any applicable income taxes are the responsibility of the winner. A winner will be selected in a random drawing on or about March 11th. Odds of winning depend on the number of eligible entries. The winner will be required to sign an affidavit of eligibility and release. Limit one entry per household. You can find all of these details at WPR.org.
And I hope you will pledge right now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552. Maybe your gift is $50, maybe it's $100 or $500, maybe it's $1,000. Whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Three more to get to Judith's measly goal of 100. So let's go.
All right. For you to get great radio, we need to pay the bills just like any other business or any other household. Specifically, we need to pay for programs, phone lines, computers, and broadcasting towers.
You know, I mentioned $1,000 earlier. If you can, consider a $1,000 contribution. It'll help cover the costs that make fulfilling our mission, providing valuable programs for Wisconsin possible. Make your pledge right now, any amount, though, at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
On this program, we cover topics like environmental and consumer issues, gardening, how-to topics, health, wellness, Wisconsin authors, and Wisconsin food. You get a lot of great information from this program, and it's possible only because of your financial support of Wisconsin Public Radio. Please support this program and all the other programs you enjoy on WPR right now with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That's WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Well, now we have only two to go to reach 100. Help the programs that you depend on. And we're looking for, actually, I'm looking for... Oh, now we're at 99. Okay, I'm looking. I wanted to double, so 130 was what I was shooting
31.
For.
31.
We've got 31 more pledges to go. Make yours at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Maybe you find that WPR is a great companion during your day. We're on the air 24 hours a day, whether you're at your home or office, listening on your iPhone or iPod, at the gym, wherever, with others or alone, concentrating or relaxing.
Like a good companion, you count on us for timely news, for great music, for intelligent talk. Now we're counting on you to make a donation and become a member.
Please give now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552.
We have an exciting drawing today. Pledge any amount. You'll be entered in a drawing for an iPad. All pledges today only at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. They'll be entered in this drawing. You can find out all the details about the iPad drawing at WPR.org. And make your pledge while you're there. Do it.
You know, if you're like me, you probably spend more money than you realize during the course of a day. A cup of coffee here, a lunch there, a magazine or a newspaper. It adds up to a lot of money over the course of a month.
You might spend more money than you realize, and I tell you what, you're listening every day here. It's just as important as those other daily things you enjoy, so spend some money on it.